95 is Cullman's Independent Radio. And now, it's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Metherly.
Good evening, everybody. I'm not Big D, and I'm also not Melvin Hastings. This is Josh O'Neill, and I'll be your host this evening. Melvin is, thank you. Hold the applause in the audience, please. Thanks to Melvin for letting me fill in for him tonight, as he is out with some speaking engagements for the election upcoming for running for circuit judge. So I appreciate the chance to come and talk to everybody. A couple of things we're going to talk about, but anybody that wants to call at any time, you have any questions on any topic we're discussing or anything else you want to discuss, 256-737-9505, call and we'll be happy to take your questions. Try not to cough too much tonight after spending a week in the Smoky Casino in Cherokee, North Carolina. But in any way, topics in the news. First thing I wanted to talk about tonight was some things that's happening related to the White House, I guess you could say, with the FBI raid of Attorney Michael Cohen's office from some documents in relation to his representation of President Trump before he took office, and you know, payments he made, different things. Who knows exactly what it is they're looking to find.
So since you offered to let me join you tonight.
Sure.
Since I'm back here in the cube, you know, running sound and all that kind of good stuff. All right, so rumors that I've heard about that is that the payments to She shall remain nameless. Stormy Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
Rumor has it that the alleged payments to her occurred before he was even Trump's lawyer, if I'm remembering correctly. Why on earth would that, unless he was a client of hers too?
Yeah, and that's the reason I say who knows what it is they're hoping to find, because you never know. And that's a good place to start is, where does your relationship with an attorney begin? Okay. If you come to my office, well, I'll give an example of a divorce. If you come to my office and you said, I need a divorce. I've been having an affair for 2 years and I just can't live this lie anymore. I need a divorce. Okay. And for whatever reason, I hope you don't, you decide to hire another attorney. And you came into me and we had a consultation. Two things. Where the relationship comes in is, first, is I've met with you about your legal issues. Second is I've learned things that wouldn't be able to be disclosed in the course of a normal search or relationship that you've discussed with me about your marriage and about your situation that would conflict me, one, from representing your spouse, if your spouse called me, if you decided not to hire me, because you've told me things in confidence. I can't then go out and represent another party in the case because I could use that information against you. Now, if you never get that far, let's say you call me and say, I need to make an appointment for a divorce. I'm a teacher at Vinemont. Can you work around my schedule and meet me after hours? And I say, sure. And you never show up. And then your husband comes and retains me in that divorce. Well, I have, the fact that you're a teacher at Vinemont is public record. There's no secrets that have been disclosed just by you making that phone call. So that wouldn't necessarily stop me from representing you or stop me from representing him. Also, anything you say to your attorney is confidential. There are some exceptions, and this is where some of these issues come in. But the first thing, and this is what I would always tell anybody, if you're going to talk to an attorney, I always tell people, if something, don't try to tell me the good parts of the story. If something bad is going on, I would a whole lot rather hear it from you as I had the other side, the investigator, the police, the district attorney's office. It's important to build a relationship where you trust them and you disclose those things.
And I would imagine the other side would be much more animated than you would be.
Yes. And that way it can help you prepare a defense. And with things, if you're going through that divorce and you say, you know, I struggle with drug addiction, well, we need to work that into our case to help you get help with that, so that it doesn't, you know, possibly hurt you in a custody situation or things like that. So don't think that you should, that's one thing that when you're selecting an attorney, you should find someone you feel comfortable with, that you feel comfortable talking to them about these issues and you can address them so that it doesn't hurt you later. And onward with that. When you have this relationship and you disclose things, and it also goes to their staff. A common issue I deal with is sometimes people will ask me a question or they want to ask me a question, and they'll call and I'm in and out and not in the office that much some weeks, and they'll talk to my secretary and say, well, I'd rather not discuss it with you. Two parts of that. One is we're a team and we work together on these cases, our staff, and we have big cases. You know, the whole office meets on what's the best way to handle this issue or that issue. So we discuss your issues among our office. But as far as the attorney-client confidentiality, that goes to our staff as well. You know, the in a criminal case, the DA's office couldn't subpoena my secretary to testify about what one of my clients said in a meeting with me. So it extends to them, so you can feel comfortable and that they won't disclose your business. Now, where these issues come in, and I don't know specifically what crime they think was committed. Everything's illegal in some way or the other, so I'm sure it violates some law somewhere. I don't really know. But if you... There's a fine line between in representing someone, and I'll give you a good bankruptcy example because I deal with that a lot. Bankruptcy is designed for people to get a fresh start. They can't pay their debts, and if they want to liquidate their property, that their creditors get a pro rata share of the liquidation of their property. Meaning, if you owe $1 million and you say, look, I'm done, they can have this $100,000 piece of land I have and just let me walk away and start over, then everybody gets 10% of whatever their claim is minus court fees and expenses. So that's the purpose of it, however that is, simplistically put. If you came to me and said, okay, same example, I have this piece of land and I'm going to file bankruptcy, and now I work for whatever local business and I don't want them to know what I'm doing, okay, that's fine, that's perfectly within your right. If they contacted me and said, why did they meet with you? Well, I can't tell you, that's not, you know, that's a privileged communication. That's covered under the attorney-client privilege. Okay. Further than that, let's say you came to me with that same example and you have $1 million worth of debt in this one little piece of land and you said, oh yeah, I know you do a lot of bankruptcy work, so I know you can tell me how to get around this. Also, I own a farm in Kentucky that's worth $3 million and it's paid for. But I don't want to disclose that. If you tell me that, and then we, and I say, well, you know, if the court happens to audit your case, here's what they're going to look for. So here's the way you can hide that. That is, in the bankruptcy code, that's fraud. You can't, and it says on your petition, if you file, for example, that, you know, you've disclosed your assets truthfully and accurately. If you do that, and you came to me to help you do that, and say, and use that as a loop around the wall, to try to find loopholes or things that they wouldn't see, then I'm in as much trouble as you are. And we could both be guilty of whatever criminal act we've committed because you didn't come to see me to represent you. You came to see me in furtherance to help you further your crime. And that's where the issue will come in, is to say, well, what is it you're looking for to say that where's the line drawn in their cases between if they're whatever crime they say is committed, did you come see me after you did all this? Or did you come see me to say, this is what we did, how can we make this go away in an illegal way? So that's where the distinction will lie. Now, what is it they could find, or what is it they would expect to see, is if there are documents or notes or things that say, you know, this is where you need to bury the body. Okay. This is the best place. Nobody will look. I know you did this. Here's how you cover it up. Obviously, you can't do that. Now, what normally happens, what I would expect to see in this situation is there was a gentleman I went to law school with that hired him and his ex-girlfriend had some disputes. Their relationship went sour, so he decided the best way to dissolve his relationship with her was to hire somebody to kill her. And he did this and paid somebody that thankfully they never were able to fulfill their end of the contract, but they were paid to kill his ex-girlfriend. After he was arrested, you know, he represented other clients. He had a laptop. He had notebooks full of paper on all these things. Some of them were these detailed notes and meetings, which I don't know why you'd ever write this stuff down about his plan to kill his ex-girlfriend. The other stuff was on his other clients, which is protected communications. And it's the same thing in the what I would expect to happen next in Michael Cohen's case is somebody has to, normally in cases in Alabama where attorneys do that, the court will appoint or hire a third party that's not the DA's office or the court or the defendant to go through these things to see what looks like it's privileged and has nothing to do with the representation of clients or the president on legal matters and what looks like it could be related to this fraud. As a whole, it's a really, really tough issue to say that it's not covered. To say that he actually took steps to further a crime, that's way out there. Because, one, if he's savvy, he doesn't write this stuff down. And two, you have to, as an attorney, you know, you have to have direct knowledge of it. And you have to know that that's why your information given and all these things, that's why you're doing it, where that relates to, you know, tying all these examples together. if you come in and tell me something, as your lawyer, I have a duty to listen to you and believe you. And the court does require me to make a sort of a good faith effort to look into the facts, but I don't have to go exceedingly far. You know, back to my bankruptcy example, if I've known you, I went to school with you, grew up in Alabama, I knew that your grandparents lived in Gadsden and your aunt and uncle lived over in Oneonta, and you never talked about anybody in Kentucky, and you decided to hide this farm from me in Kentucky, and we filed anyway and the court found it. Well, there's no reasonable basis I would have to ever go search property records in Kentucky. There's nothing you've done to make me think you were lying. So in taking you for what you said, and if you were truthful with me, and I did the law requires a reasonable investigation, doesn't require a complete and total investigation on my part. If I take you for what you said, then I'm not required to do all those things, and I wouldn't have to. Even if President Trump had came to Michael Cohen and he had lied to him, if the lie seemed reasonable, hey, run with that. That's our story. That's what you said happened. That's what we did. That's my job. You know, it's not my job to make this crazy investigation to prove that you're lying. And how that relates, and I know we're about to come up on a break, and then I'll discuss how that relates to criminal cases, because I could see where people would say, well, if someone comes in and confesses and says, yeah, I killed this person, but I want to not go to jail, can you help me with that? Well, yes, we can help you with that. And how do you deal with, people would say, how do you stand up in court and say he didn't do it when not only the evidence is overwhelming and he said he did it? So is that not the same thing? And it's not. And after the break, I'll explain how the differences work with that.
We usually do Law and Order coming in and out of the show, but I figured after hearing everything that you just went over, this is one called You Worry Me. I thought it was appropriate. Something that I heard recently that kind of summarizes everything you just said. Let me see if I can remember it correctly. Never email something that you can say on the phone, and never say something on the phone that you can say in person.
Well, if you go back and watch all the mob movies, why do you think they went to payphones? Because their house phones were wiretapped. Why do you think they always met at little out-of-the-way diners in these movies? That's really the way they did it, because there was nobody there to say, I saw them and they said this.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yep.
All right, we'll be back in a minute with more Understanding the Law. If you guys want to participate, 256-737-9505. That's like the frequency that you're tuned into. We'll be back in a minute.
A lot of signs on the side of the road right now, which means an election is coming up. Sure, name recognition is good, but in 2018, voters expect a little more than that. We can help. Radio is a great medium to tell voters more about yourself, your platform, and your goals. Our very own Melissa with Live 95 is ready to take your call at 256-339-5554. 256-339-5554. Live 95 can help get your message out to Cullman County.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help. But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Cullman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Cullman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Cullman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Cullman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Cullman County VOAD, call the Cullman County EMA at 739-5410. 739-5410. Email CullmanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Cullman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Cullman County VOAD is Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster.
Are you having trouble seeing your computer screen? Are the traffic signs looking a little fuzzy? Are the things that you used to be able to see looking just a little out of focus? Dr. Wayne Fuller has been helping Coleman see better for years, and he's still located on 2nd Avenue between the Catholic Church and Highway 278. You can call his friendly staff at 256-734-1121, and they'll be happy to get you seeing better, whether it's with contacts, glasses designed just for you, or a low-cost alternative to LASIK. Again, Dr. Wayne Fuller is available at 256-734-1121.
I'm Ed Horrell, founder of the Kindness Revolution. Today we want to say thank you to the over 62 million in the U.S. who volunteer their time for various organizations. That's a staggering number, 62 million. But according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that number is actually on the decline, possibly as much as 4% lower than a few years ago. So our challenge this week is simple. Do two things. First of all, if you know of someone who's volunteering their time for a good cause, tell them thank you. Whether it's a soup kitchen, coaching an athletic team, or singing in the choir, why not take a minute and say thanks? But just as importantly, why not take a look and see what each of us can do to volunteer a little time to help a good cause? Causes doing good and in need of volunteers are everywhere, so they won't be hard to find. To learn more, check us out at thekindnessrevolution.net.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's Independent Radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Well, it's still not Big D. It's still not Melvin, but Josh O'Neill back with you. Again, thanks to Melvin for letting me come out tonight and do this. Once again, if you have any questions, 256-737-9505, 256-737-9505. And now one last thing to touch on the attorney-client privilege, is how is that affected in criminal cases? Because if you take what I said before the break and you say, well, you said you couldn't help people in furtherance of a crime. And if somebody comes in and says, well, I robbed this bank or I stole this, how can you represent them? Aren't you furthering their help in getting away with the crime because they've told you they committed the crime? The answer to that in a criminal case is what I always tell people is this. I'm not there. One, I can't change the facts. Two, I'm not necessarily there to say he didn't do it. I'm there to make sure that all of his constitutional rights are protected. One of my favorite quotes from Hugo Black, who was from Alabama in the federal courthouse down in Birmingham, is named after. And people misconstrue this about criminal law sometimes is why do these people get trials and why do they do this and why do they do that? Is he always said, the system is designed where I had rather see 1,000 guilty men go free than one innocent man have his liberties restrained for a single second. That's the purpose of the Constitution. To protect people's rights, not to try to get the bad guys off the street, to make sure that we do everything we can before we restrict these people's freedoms. So how that works in a criminal case is, as an attorney, you're not allowed to allow perjury. If this person has confessed, I can't, and they say, well, yeah, I killed this person, but my girlfriend will be glad to come in and say that I was with her that night. I can't do that. Now, if he lies to me before he comes in and says he's with his girlfriend, then what am I supposed to do? Nothing. So, if he is truthful, then I can't put on a defense to make sure – I can't put on a defense of witnesses that he's told me these people are lying. That would be unethical for me to do that. But even if he did say he's guilty, you know, the state cannot force you to testify against yourself, for one. And then secondly, they cannot detain you or sentence you to jail without your right to trial by jury. And there's a billboard that an attorney in Birmingham has that I thought was very innocent. He says it's very interesting. It says that just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. And sometimes it's as odd as it is to think about, the law is kind of like that, to say, well, even if it seems more than likely that you did it, can they prove to a jury of 12 people that you did this beyond a reasonable doubt, when all the boundaries and parameters of the Constitution are met in that process, you know, where you can't have, where all, you have to be able to confront all the witnesses against you. Any evidence they present against you must be verified and tested to be sure that it's accurate. And all the other protections you have. But as an attorney, you're there in a criminal case to make sure the state does their job, to not lie for your client, because you can't change the facts, but you can make sure that everything that was done was within his constitutional rights. And also, in that case, I don't have to disclose what he told me because of that, because you're there to protect the Constitution, not necessarily further his act, because whatever's been done is done. It was always rumored, when I was high school age, I guess I was 8th, 9th grade, when O.J. Simpson was tried, which was, if anybody remembers, was the biggest story in the nation for 6-8 months. There was a rumor that when his lawyer was at the jail one night and O.J. was, he didn't exactly confess, but the jailer heard him crying and say, why did I do this? Why did I get myself in this spot? But the person was in a room, in a back room, storage room, where they could overhear it. And the state wanted to let them put them on the stand to testify to that, but the judge wouldn't admit it because he said it was in violation of their attorney-client privilege. Because that's another couple of things to it, is when you look at your expectation. If you're in a closed room with me and somebody's peeping in on us, that's a violation of your right. They can't do that. You have a right to be able to speak freely and privately with your attorney about matters in your case. Well, can you waive that right? Well, sure. If we meet in a public place, which is dumb, if we have lunch at McDonald's at noon and there's all these people in there and they overhear our conversation, then you have no expectation that that's a private conversation. So therefore, that's not covered. Our phone calls are covered. Our emails are covered if they're just between me and my client. Text messages would be covered. Facebook messages, any interaction you have where it's the expectation that just me and my client will see them, all those things are covered by your attorney-client privilege. If you make, you know, public things that's not with me or my staff, that would open the door to say that you've waived your privilege. So that's the basics of how attorney-client privilege works and why you need to discuss things private with your attorney and why you can feel free to discuss even crimes you've done. Sometimes when I do initial consultations with people who've been accused of a crime, I always say, if it'll make you feel better, I'll tell you about some crimes I've committed and I wasn't arrested for. So just to make them comfortable and understand that, you know, whatever you tell me is I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to help you. So be honest, be open, but don't be too open. and don't mention things. You don't meet in public. Don't post things in public forums to violate your privilege. Next thing I want to talk about, another big topic in the news, I don't know if people understand how it works or why it works the way it does, is the pending lawsuit investigation against all the sheriffs in Coleman, not in Coleman, but statewide. And I don't know how many people know this, and it's a really odd law. I don't know that it's like this in any, I haven't found another state where it's like that. But the law reads like this. The sheriff is an elected official. He's in charge of the police force. He's in charge of the jail, the warden, their staff. They all report to the sheriff. And for that, as an elected official, sheriff's paid a salary. Also, you know, the sheriff's office receives budgets for different things each year. They get budgets for staff, improvements, vehicles. I mean, it's pages and pages long of all the stuff they get. Another thing they get is a budget to feed the inmates. And anybody that's in custody, whether it's in Coleman or whatever jail, the jail has to treat you somewhat humanely. You know, they have to feed you if you need medical attention. You know, if you have a heart attack, they can't let you sit there and die. They've got to take you to the hospital. They've got to take you to the doctor. You know, if you have diabetes and you're on medicine for being a diabetic, they have to, you know, provide you the medication you take and let you take it. You know, they have to give you water when it's hot and clothes when it's cold and all that stuff. Well, anyway, so each sheriff is given a budget to feed the inmates. And at the end of the year, whatever's left from that budget, the sheriff gets to keep. Now, how much of it can he keep? Well, the weird thing about the way the law is written, there's no discretion that said you have to feed this, you have to do this, you have to provide them so many calories a day, you got to do all these different things. It doesn't say any of that. It just says whatever's left, he keeps. The sheriff in Gadsden has gotten some hot water of sorts because people would say that he tried to skim as much of it off as he could, to the point that some of the inmates were malnourished and he bought a beach house. I know in that litigation, there's currently a fight over trying to make some of the sheriffs disclose their tax records to see how much they kept or how much was paid out. So there's really no oversight or no discretion. It's just feed the inmates and the sheriff can keep the rest. He can use it for a general fund things or he can put it in his pocket. You know, it would be legal for, if the sheriff got $1 million and he could feed him for $100,000, to put the other $900 in his pocket. Now that wouldn't be possible because if it was that much, then their budget would be cut. You know, the sheriff doesn't have to keep it. He can use it for discretion for whatever he wants. You know, there's never been, to my knowledge, there's never been any problems in Coleman. You know, I've never had clients either that complain about we don't get to eat or we don't get to do this, or I've never had anybody that even looks like they lost weight. They look like they gain weight when they're over there, so obviously they're eating pretty good. But it's interesting. It's an interesting law. I don't know where it'll turn out, but if you see that in the papers, that's what the gist of what's happening is. There are some federal lawyers and different things that have made some claims about how that's unconstitutional for them to spend the money in this way, because the feds are, part of the money that they receive is earmarked federal funds to feed inmates, and they're not using it for that. And if some of that money's flowing through and it ends up directly in their pocket, then it's not being used for what it was allocated for, which creates an interesting problem, because they're following state law, but they're not following these federal budgeting guidelines or whatever you want to call it. So, in theory, they've done nothing wrong because they're doing what the state allows them to do. But the legislature, the issue had been kicked around during this last legislative session, but nothing, the law wasn't changed. There was no bills came up, and they didn't get to that. But it just creates an interesting dynamic of sorts, is what is, you know, where does the ethical line draw? How much should I take? Should I take any? Should I not take any? Should I try to take every dime I can? Because in theory, all of those different perspectives are legal. You know, you could be like the sheriff in Etowah County that says, I'm going to become a millionaire being the sheriff. Or you could be, you know, like I know Matt Gentry, who does a good job, and some of the things he does, he doesn't, you know, some of their budget, they use it for other areas and things that they need and equipment they need replaced, not necessarily just to, you know, keep the money personally. So, but all those things are legal, and it's a strange law. I don't know anywhere else that it's like that. And it's hard for me to believe it's going to stay that way long term. You know, it's not usually a good idea for any government money just people have the discretion to do whatever they want to with it. That's just not wise and not usually the best way to spend our tax dollars. But that, if you see that in the paper, that's the gist of it. That's what it's about. And until there's some court orders on who has to produce what and who gets what, where it'll end up, nobody knows. And it's like most things. I'm sure that, you know, of every 100 people that are sheriff, 99 of them stretch their budget as thin as they can to do as much for their people and their resources and even treat the inmates as best they can. And, you know, 1 out of 100 buys a beach house. And the 1 out of 100 that buys a beach house gets the other 99 in trouble. That's usually the way it works. So, time for our next break. And after our break, we'll discuss something that is interesting to me, as always, gambling and some changes in gambling laws that are coming. Unfortunately, not in Alabama.
I'm Ed Horrell, founder of the Kindness Revolution. Today, we want to say thank you to the over 62 million in the U.S. who volunteer their time for various organizations. That's a staggering number, 62 million. But according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that number is actually on the decline, possibly as much as 4% lower than a few years ago. So our challenge this week is simple. Do two things. First of all, if you know of someone who's volunteering their time for a good cause, tell them thank you. Whether it's a soup kitchen, coaching an athletic team, or singing in the choir, why not take a minute and say thanks? But just as importantly, why not take a look and see what each of us can do to volunteer a little time to help a good cause? Causes doing good and in need of volunteers are everywhere, so they won't be hard to find. To learn more, check us out at thekindnessrevolution.net.
Hey guys, let's face it, we all want to look our best, but with minimal effort, right? Well, that's where Angela at Scissor Salon comes in. She'll get you looking your best so you're always on top of your game. Walk-ins are always welcome. Scissor Salon, Highway 278 East, just past the water plant, 735-3089. 735-3089. Look for the big scissors on the roof.
There are a lot of signs on the side of the road right now, which means an election is coming up. Sure, name recognition is good. But in 2018, voters expect a little more than that. We can help. Radio is a great medium to tell voters more about yourself, your platform, and your goals. Our very own Melissa with Live 95 is ready to take your call at 256-339-5554. 256-339-5554. Live 95 can help get your message out to Cullman County.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help.
But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Cullman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Cullman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Cullman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Cullman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Cullman County VOAD, call the Cullman County EMA at 739-5410, 739-5410. Email CullmanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Cullman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Cullman County VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Cullman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Back again, as you know, this is not Big D or Melvin Hastings. This is Josh O'Neill filling in for Melvin tonight. Again, if you want to call and talk about these topics or anything else, 256-737-9505. That's 737-9505. Anything you'd like to talk about, I'll be glad to answer any questions you have. Since Melvin's not here, we'll talk about a subject that's near and dear to my heart, which is how part of my income for the year comes from. Not after this last week, a couple of gentlemen I know that travel the poker circuit from Florida, they could probably split a Honda Civic for their used Honda Civic for their daughter after what they beat me out of last week. But sometimes that's how it goes. But a topic that's near and dear to my heart, gambling. In a very interesting case, and these are all the alcohol is to say this, and these are all, and I've seen comments on this. The old alcohol law in Alabama, which was struck down for about 2 days a couple years ago, gay marriage and gambling will all be decided for exactly the same reason, with exactly the same result. How that relates together. The Fifth Amendment, which applies to the federal government, and the 14th Amendment and the Constitution, which apply to the states, basically says that everybody shall have equal protection under the laws, which in short means we must all be treated equal and have equal rights, equal opportunities. You know, there shouldn't be, you couldn't say, it would be unconstitutional if there was a law that says a woman who is found guilty of distributing drugs shall receive half the penalty of a man. Well, why? They're both committing a crime. Why should the woman get less or the man necessarily get more, or vice versa? They shouldn't. Now, a couple of years ago in Alabama, there was a law that said that when the original, and I don't know the specifics of it, I'll hit the high points. A few years ago, the law was changed in Alabama, which allowed smaller municipalities to vote on whether or not they could sell alcohol. However, the law said that any municipality that's of X size can now just vote on whether or not it shall sell alcohol unless it's in Clay County, which was a stupid, is incredibly stupid for the legislature to pass that. But what happened is, I'm sure there's somebody in Clay County that gets a lot of money from people that don't like alcohol, so he put that in there to make sure he could keep his job, even though it's obviously unconstitutional and costs the state a lot of money. Well, as soon as the law was passed, there was a lawsuit filed, and the federal court said, well, yeah, that's obviously unconstitutional, because why can other people vote on it, but Clay County can't? What's different about Clay County? Nothing. Okay. that was the same basis of which gay marriage is. Why can a man and a woman do something that a man and a man can't do? That was why they reached that decision. Which takes us to the latest case before the Supreme Court that came out of New Jersey, and there was a red article today that a decision could be released as early as today or as late as June 20th. And what the basis of the little background in, is it 90? In the 80s, there was a law passed called the, let me find the name of it, the amateur, the professional in sports amateur, the 1992, the Amateur Sports Protection Act, which prohibited sports gambling everywhere except Nevada, Delaware, Oregon, and Montana. I don't really know. I didn't know Montana was a hotbed for gambling. The only thing I can think of is at that time, none of those states had professional sports teams. I don't know if that was the reason, but this law was passed. Well, in 2012, the state of New Jersey passed a law that says we're going to have, the state of New Jersey since makes a lot of money off of, a lot of their tax dollars came from Atlantic City. Atlantic City's in a lot of trouble. It's not doing very well. They've got a lot of problems. They've done everything they can to try to increase people and have an influx of money in Atlantic City. So they said, okay, well, let's allow sports betting. Let's see if the people want to do that. Passed unanimously. And after it passed, all the professional sports leagues banded together to file a lawsuit that says you've passed an unconstitutional law because it violates this act. Well, over the next 6 years, this case bounces its way up through the federal court, and for the same reason the alcohol law in Alabama passed and the same reason gay marriage was legalized nationally, is what New Jersey's saying is, well, if these states can decide, why can't we? Why are we different? The Supreme Court heard oral arguments, and oral arguments is where, if you have in a case before an appeals court, if you have a criminal case here in Coleman, you're found guilty, you have the right to an appeal. Well, you don't go try the case again. The appellate court gets a transcript of the trial, and then both sides, the state of Alabama and the defendant, would submit a brief that is our points of, well, these are the important facts, court, and here's why we think the decision was incorrect. And then the court will look at it and say, yes or no, it was, it wasn't. If it was, your conviction stands. If it wasn't, they can reverse it and say the sentence was unconstitutional, this was, or you get a whole new trial. Okay. In this case, the sports organizations won because the letter of the law was clear. So the state of New Jersey took it all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court heard arguments. And for most people in the legal community that were there, they feel like I skipped what an oral argument is. The court can decide on the briefs, or they can come if they have questions and it's a complex fact. Sometimes they'll say, we're going to hold an oral argument. And what that means is both sides will come and say, court, this is what my brief says, and here's the point, and here's why this is a big deal, and here's why this is an important case. You don't have, in federal court or how a case gets to the Supreme Court, nobody has a automatic right to for the United States Supreme Court to hear their case. All their appeals come from the federal courts all across the country. There's hundreds and hundreds of, probably 1,000 or I don't know how many cases they're asked to hear a year, and they hear a handful of the biggest, 20 or 30. And this is one of the ones they heard. And most legal scholars and legal experts who were at the arguments say that they think they're going to find that the law is unconstitutional, and that any state can regulate, as the law says, that any state can decide and regulate gambling within its own borders. What that means is Now, any state could pass a law to allow sports books and sports betting. And you wouldn't have to be in, you know, you wouldn't be just in Las Vegas. You could, if that law changed and Alabama wanted to, you could pass a law that says it's legal and you could turn one of these old check cashing places into a sports book. That'll never happen. It'll never happen here. It's, I know several people who make their living as bookies. I don't know any people that don't bet on sports. I think if you want to each their own. I have my own vices, but I think it's incredibly ridiculous. It's not a crime. And to me, it's a victimless crime. If that's how you choose to spend your money, go ahead. But, in doing that, now every state will be able to decide for itself whether or not they have sports betting. The pro sports leagues years ago were against it. Were against regulating gambling. If you remember, a few years ago there was an NBA referee who was indicted on some point shavings things. And what point shaving is when you're in the game and you're paid off by somebody who's bet on the game to affect the outcome so that they win their bet. There was an Auburn basketball player that got caught up in a point shaving thing. I don't think he was ever prosecuted, but he was sure investigated. And then on top of that, the Raiders have moved to Las Vegas. And the NHL had an expansion team this year for their first season in Las Vegas. Excuse me, which was a big step in that because a lot of folks thought that the pro sports leagues were afraid of Vegas for those reasons.
So, Josh, something that comes to mind that I'm thinking about, you know, there's so many, and you even alluded to it earlier in the show, that there are so many, crimes out there. And a lot of them are discovered, but many of them are not discovered. Like you had mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes somebody will tell a story about, oh, I committed a crime and I didn't get caught. Don't worry about it, man.
Uh-huh.
We know that there's a process for determining when they come after you and when they don't. And obviously a lot of it has to do with probable cause, but a lot of it is probably political too.
Sure.
I'm assuming the DA or whoever the prosecutor is has what they would refer to as, I learned on Law and Order, how many seasons do they have, like 22 or something? Yeah. Prosecutorial discretion.
It's the state has a right to prosecute whatever they want or whatever they don't want. And there are issues that come up.
So we could take the random, like, gambling halls or bingo halls or, you know, the rich guy in Jasper who has the casino in his basement. I mean, do we go off hot tips on those or after enough complaints come in or?
Well,
do you want to go there?
Yeah, I'll be glad to go there, and I won't reveal where they are or who it is, because even me saying this, it's legal for me to do. It's not illegal for me to participate in these poker games. It's legal for the house to make money. They're everywhere. You could play poker at a high enough stake living in Coleman, and I travel and say I'll never travel more than 50 miles. I could play every day and play for a living.
I believe it.
Because there's enough games running. But in saying that if they have complaints, can they investigate? They can if they have enough complaints. And that's one thing is the sheriff's office.
It is just a complaint enough probable cause. I guess what you just said it is.
No, I don't think it would be a complaint that, well, and this, if you just said people are in there gambling, well, how do you know? Like, you could say, okay, well, they could try to investigate that. They could talk to people. You know, is it enough probable cause to charge them? No. The fact that somebody said, I think people are in there gambling, I don't think that would be enough to be probable cause. If you talk to people, if you said, I saw this person leaving, you question this person, they freely talk to you, which again, you know, you don't have a right to incriminate yourself. You don't have to talk to the police if they want. If they call you and say, want to ask you some questions, say, I don't want to answer them. Sorry. And so they talk to these people and they put all that together.
Is what they portray on Law and Order the best thing to do? As soon as they look at you and say lawyer and walk away?
You know, Probably I would always say it is.
My background's information technology. I've got friends that are in healthcare. Like, I can't watch any computer show. They can't watch any healthcare show because Hollywood just screws it up so bad.
But yeah, I think it's probably especially if it's a real serious thing. I think it's always best, even if you just talk to a lawyer to make sure you understand what you're going to talk to them about, because a lot of times in serious crimes, you know, felony crimes, you're probably not going to go explain your way out of it. If they've usually got enough to arrest you, they're just trying to get a confession, in my experience.
All the cop and lawyer shows where they're, you know, they're grilling you in the back room with the one light on, I mean, is all that?
It happens. It really does happen. They make you sign a waiver that says you understand you have a right to an attorney. You know, they have to inform you that you have a right to an attorney, and your right to talk to them.
And all the TV shows, they're like, yeah, but, you know, if you wait on a lawyer, that makes you look more guilty. We're going to go a lot harder on you, blah, blah, blah.
That's another thing about those. They don't have a duty to be honest with you. Say me and you got arrested for some crime that they thought we committed together. They could put you in the other room and say, now, Josh is over there, and he's already confessed. And so you need to confess, and if you do, you know,
you're in trouble.
If you don't confess, this is going to be hard on you. Now, what they can't do is promise you leniency for a confession. They can't say, well, we'll go easy on you if you'll tell us the truth. That's not a free and voluntary confession because you think you're getting something for it. There was a murder confession that came in a few years ago, that before Roy Moore was removed for the whatever time it was he was removed. he actually overturned because the sheriff said, son, if you'll tell me the truth, I ain't promising you won't get convicted, but I'll do the best I can do for you.
Wow.
And they ruled that confession was not free and voluntary. But they could have you in another room and say, now, Josh is over there confessing, so you better tell us the truth too. And when I'm saying I didn't do anything, I want a lawyer, I'm leaving. They could tell you that, even though that's not true. They can lie to you.
But now all this deal-making is true, too, I guess. You know, if you want to turn on somebody else and say they did something, too,
and I've had situations like that, too, in criminal representation. We'll say, well, you know, we want a statement from so-and-so. And I'll say, okay, well, what's in it for us?
Yeah.
You know, give me an offer, and I'll take it to him and see if he's willing to talk. And see, settlement negotiations are inadmissible. So if the DA comes to me and says, well, we'll offer you this to settle, and then I come back and say, well, this is, if you want a confession, this is what it's going to take. None of that's ever admissible because those are settlement negotiations.
Mm.
So in theory, yeah, but like you can have, you know, the feds do that a lot. Because in federal court, the feds prosecute so few cases in short that if they prosecute, if you ever hear anybody got indicted by the feds, they got them because they don't take many cases and they only take the really good ones.
Well, coming full circle back to what we opened the show with, talking about Trump's lawyer and all that, you know, the talking heads keep implying that that's what they're going to do. They're going to get somebody to flip on somebody else, to flip on somebody else,
that's the
to
way
flip
they
on
work.
Somebody else,
that's
to try to get them to flip on, mm-hmm. on the president. So.
Mm-hmm. That's the way they work, and that's the way they do is they offer these. They're called 5K1 motions, substantial corroboration and assistance in federal court. You can get, that's the best way to get your sentence reduced is if you offer them information that substantially aids them or cooperates in the investigation of another person, then the court considers that a great downward departure in sentencing, but for another day. But yeah, that's how that works. That's what they do. They come at you and say, if you'll do this, you know, you could get 20 years, but we'll give you 3.
So now you've learned how it really works, y'all.
That's how it works.
Josh, you want to go 5 more minutes since I derailed your show? Or you
no.
Want to call it a night?
Just in short, I guess just in short, you know, the next time you visit another state that's not Alabama and Georgia, you'll probably be able to they said there's as many as 30 states have legislation ready to start sports betting. I know Mississippi does. I know Florida does. So it's coming. And, you know, it'll be coming for the same reason. Sports betting and gay marriage and alcohol sales in Clay County will all come for the same reason.
The times, they are changing.
The times, they are changing. So, yeah, and in short, yeah, go enjoy some gambling and don't talk to the police. Don't lie to your lawyer.
Thanks for coming in tonight, Josh.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Y'all stay tuned. We're going to have a replay of last week's Just Joshing Around. Josh had a meeting tonight, so y'all stay tuned for that. A lot of good information. They always cover pop culture and a little bit of politics, and usually they hash the millennials a little bit and the baby boomers and who knows what else. So y'all stay tuned for that. You're listening to Live 95, Coleman's Independent Radio.
There are a lot of signs on the side of the road right now, which means an election is coming up. Sure, name recognition is good, but in 2018, voters expect a little more than that. We can help. Radio is a great medium to tell voters more about yourself, your platform, and your goals. Our very own Melissa with Live 95 is ready to take your call at 256-339-5554. 256-339-5554. Live 95 can help get your message out to Cullman County.